All right, welcome back to Third String Pod. This is episode 25. I'm here with Pete LaFleed. Pete, how are you doing?
I'm good, Zach. Happy spring to you, my friend. How are things in Texas?
Dude, things are great now. You know, since our last podcast, I'm one appendix lighter, actually.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, dump it was that dead weight, right?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. I woke up like in the wee hours of the morning on Monday and immediately knew something was dreadfully wrong with what was going on inside me. Like, you know, it felt like there was an alien inside me or something. Ended up going to the hospital and did all the tests there and everything. And they were like, yep, you've got appendicitis. So we're going to take it out this morning. So that's what happened. And I've been pretty much recovering since, although the recovery, as I understand it, is way easier than it used to be. They no longer do like a big ol' cut to get in there. They do the laparoscopic procedure. So
okay,
you have three like really tiny incisions and they go in there, like they inflate you like a balloon. This is probably way too graphic than like most of our listeners want to know, but you know, the more you know. So they inflate you so they can see in there with a camera, and then they go in there with two other instruments through the other two incisions and you know, do whatever they need to do. So pretty crazy how much medicine has advanced. And now all of our listeners know that. So anyway, that was my week. I know you were on the road as well. So how was your week?
I was in Vegas, almost got to that Golden Knights game on Wednesday night, but the timing didn't work out with flights, but watched it from the Centurion Lounge for anyone who frequents Vegas.
So oh, yes. Nice.
Watched that there, watched a good 1-0 win for the Golden Knights. Unfortunately, my Capitals, as expected, blew it in overtime in game one. So I'm 1-1 in the NHL playoffs this year. But yeah, good to be home. A little cooler up here in North Dakota than it is in Vegas. Hard to believe, right? But good to be home.
Well, what are we talking about today? We've got off the bench segment here. We're gonna keep it short, like we're trying to do these days. We've gotten some good feedback from listeners that they like us not talking as much. So we're gonna try to keep that trend going.
But try not to read too deeply into that one.
Yeah, exactly. Off the bench segment, though. What should we talk about here, Pete?
So I think we gotta start out with the breaking news out of the NFL this morning. So the NFL is still the best PR machine in terms of a league who keeps people engaged year round. I mean, moving the draft back to when they did in late April, they get a lot of attention. But I think we got to talk this morning about the Dallas Cowboys severing ties with the much famed and also much maligned Dez Bryant this morning. So yeah. Dez Bryant went in to see old Jerry Jones this morning at what is it they call their
Jerry
team
World,
headquarters?
Right?
They play at Jerry World, but they call their team headquarters the Star in Frisco, Texas out there. But yeah, they called Dez Bryant in, released him, and then Dez, much like other famous people who dominate the news these days, immediately took to Twitter.
It's the only way.
And talked to, what was that?
It's the only way.
Of course, how other way is there to communicate these
right.
days? I mean, agents, forget them, right?
No.
Forget him. Came out and said this wasn't his. Let me quote this tweet exactly. And I quote from at Dez Bryant, Cowboy Nation, I need you to know that this wasn't my decision. I will always love y'all, forever Dallas in my heart. And then what really got the people going, because you know I love a good provocative tweet, he also mentioned that he'll be seeing the Cowboys twice next year. So to me, that reads NFC East. Am I right?
Yeah, that's how I read it. And I saw a report on Bleeding Green Nation, which is one of the Eagles blogs I frequent the most, that he is indicating to the team, to the Cowboys, apart from that provocative tweet, that he is going to stay in the NFC East. So I'm pretty sure he's not going to go to the Eagles. So that leaves the Giants and the Redskins. Do you see the Redskins making a move on him, Pete?
I do. I don't like it, but I do. So I think they do just because Bruce Allen, who... You know, I'm not a big fan of the Redskins GM, loves making these big name trades and is on record a lot in terms of saying that he likes to wait for the big names to pop up before the draft. So I totally think that they could go there. I think the Redskins don't really have a great number one receiver. So I think on paper, it kind of works out. I just don't see Dez Bryant fitting in a Jay Gruden system. And also, I mean, Dez Bryant has not had great years since he signed that massive contract in 2015. Since signing his 5-year $70 million contract in 2015, he's only 29, but he has not recorded more than 69 catches or 838 yards in a season. He is a 3-time Pro Bowler, but he missed a lot of time in 2015 with a broken foot. Was also out a lot in 2016. And overall, he's down. Obviously, he's still a great receiver, but for the amount of money you're going to have to pay this guy, I don't see how he fits. I do think he fits in New York. I really do. I think if Eli Manning is sticking around, one of our listeners, Darnell, who we talked to a lot, who's a big Eagles fan as well, actually threw this tweet at me earlier that Dez Bryant, quote, requires QBs willing to throw into tight coverage. The most aggressive windows of guys, I'm sorry, that didn't make any sense. NFL's most aggressive tight window throwers among starting QBs in 2017, your boy Carson Wentz.
That's right.
Jameis Winston, Cam Newton, Matt Stafford, Eli Manning. I mean, so you put him on the other side against Odell Beckham. I don't think you're going to come up against a team who has the quarterback power to consistently cover those two guys. Like this seems like a match made in heaven to me to put him in New York.
Yeah, that's probably right. And maybe Dave Gettleman, the new GM up there, is thinking that as well. I mean, I'm thinking of a receiving core that now includes Odell Beckham and Sterling Shepard and then adding Dez. I think Dez is no longer your number one guy, but you don't need a number one guy in New York because you have the best receiver in the NFL. Maybe Antonio Brown would be that, but at least a top three receiver, right, in OBJ. So, yeah, you put Dez Bryant on the other side, and, yeah, you dare any secondary to cover down on you guys. So yeah, I can see that. I can also see the Redskins thing though, for the reasons you pointed out. And, if the Redskins signed as Bryant, I'm just going to laugh. It's going to be hilarious. And I'm sorry, Pete, but that front office,
you're not sorry. Don't lie to me.
That front office is a mess. And I mean, I really kind of, it would be funny if they signed as Bryant. Like you said, his stats have been declining over the past 3 years. He had a really bad year in 2015 because he missed a lot of those games with the foot issue, like you mentioned. But even this past year, he played all 16 games, only 838 yards on those 16 games. That was his highest yardage total since 2014. But his yards per reception were the lowest of his career. So it took a lot of receptions to get there, and he only had 6 touchdowns to go with that, which is the second lowest total of his career after that 2015 season where he only played 9 games. So basically, Bryant's no longer an elite receiver. I think he could make sense in New York for the reasons you mentioned, but if Washington signs him thinking that they're going to have a new number one, it's going to be hilarious.
Yeah. Do you think that there is a secondary in the NFC East who can keep up with Dez Bryant plus one other star receiver? I mean, obviously we mentioned New York has those. I mean, I think he could tear up a defense still because he's no longer the number one guy. That he's going to get the number two corner, or he's going to pick up a strong safety. I think this could be a little bit of a change. So my other question to you, I'm sorry, a change in the defensive schemes around the division.
Okay.
My other question to you though is, do you want the drama that is Dez Bryant showing up in your locker room, especially if you're in New York and you're already dealing with Odell Beckham Jr. all the time?
No, definitely not. I mean, I think New York already wants to get rid of OBJ.
Yeah.
And they've now been making indications in the past week. I saw some reports that they're not expecting to be able to offload him because he's just demanding way too much money on his second contract. So I don't think they'll be able to. But yeah, I think they're already sick of the drama that he's brought, and bringing in another wide receiver who has, you know, made waves for his off-field conduct and quotes. Yeah, maybe not the best PR situation.
Are you willing, if you are the GM of the Giants after the disastrous year you had, to try to find a good trade? I don't think you're getting 2 first round draft picks out of anywhere like some of the reports were saying a couple weeks ago. Are you willing to drop Odell Beckham Jr. now, get some great draft picks, and sign Dez Bryant almost in his place, acknowledging this is kind of a rebuilding year?
Yes, absolutely. I don't think the Giants actually contend this year. And I think that if I'm the GM, I get rid of OBJ even for one high first. I don't need 2 firsts for him. I think that's an absurd asking price. Because the reality is OBJ is really good, but one, he is a distraction. And 2, his next contract is going to be really top heavy, and there's almost no way possible that he actually lives up to the value of the second contract that people are anticipating he's going to get. So I'm not going to pay him that long-term deal. So if I'm not going to pay him, I might as well let him go now for a fairly high premium, like a high first round draft pick. And I can't really demand 2 firsts because no one's going to pay that, clearly, since no one has. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that they they could very well drop him for a good draft pick. I don't think they're willing to, though. I think with all of the bad PR the Giants have gotten over the past year, between the disastrous head coaching carousel that went on there, the benching of Eli Manning, I don't think there's a chance they drop Odell Beckham, even though they probably should. I wonder if a good veteran locker room could kind of, I don't want to say fix Odell Beckham Jr., because obviously I don't know him, but could kind of fix some of the emotion and the perceived immaturity around the NFL with OBJ right now. So I don't know.
Well, and don't forget, New York has problems on the other side of the ball too, with Eli Apple, who's caused a lot of problems with their secondary. One of his teammates, I think, described him as a cancer earlier in the season. So New York has some locker room problems to figure out. Maybe introducing a character like Dez to that would not be the best solution.
Yeah, I wonder how much of a discussion that actually is at the GM level. If we have any listeners who know the ins and outs, maybe we can get Bill Polian to call in, right? He's got to be listening to us. I would be interested how much that is actually discussed. I really am. But if you're playing that game, the Redskins have no business signing him either, because the Redskins locker room is a disaster too.
Yeah, yeah, agreed. Agreed. And you were asking about secondaries earlier. I mean, the Redskins secondary had some flashes of foundation this past season before they traded away Kendall Fuller. So
yeah. Josh Norman is down, though. I don't think Josh Norman's coming back, although I see today he's going to Dancing with the Stars, so maybe he's got a little spring in his step. But
that's how you know they're really serious about football, when they go to Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, that's how you know that they're setting up their next career already.
Yeah, I thought that was what you did, like, after you retired from the NFL. You know, like, didn't Emmitt Smith do Dancing with the Stars after he retired? Like, I thought that was like a second act thing, not like
I thought he was one of the early seasons, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're right. We'll do a segment here in a couple weeks on former players on Dancing with the Stars, for sure. Stay tuned, for sure.
Should we talk about Ohtani now?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so I think let me just distill this to a simple question for you. Are you buying into the Shohei Ohtani hype right now?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I am. If this was college football, I'd be on the Lane Kiffin hype train.
All aboard the hype train. Okay.
Woo-woo.
All right. So for our listeners, if you're not following the specifics of the Ohtani storyline, it's pretty ridiculous. 29 plate appearances so far, appearing in 7 games as a designated hitter. He is batting .346 with an on-base percentage of .414 and a slugging percentage of .769 for an OPS of 1.183 and an OPS plus of .236. Remember, OPS plus average is 100. So he's basically 136% better than average in terms of on-base percentage plus slugging. So that's his batting side. He has hit 3 home runs, including 3 in 3 straight games. His first 3 games in which he appeared as a hitter. Has 11 RBI, including last night, a bases loaded, bases clearing triple with 2 strikes behind in the count. Pitching side has been perhaps even more impressive. He is 2-0, as much as we don't really care about wins and losses. He is 2-0. He has pitched 13 innings. He has collected 18 strikeouts, including 12 strikeouts in a perfect game bid that was broken up by a hit finally in the 7th inning. He has a 1.72 FIP. A 0.462 WHIP, walks plus hits per innings pitched, is allowing 2.8 hits per 9, 0.7 home runs per 9. So he's allowed only 1 home run. Has walked only 2 batters, again, in 13 innings of action and the 18 strikeouts. So this guy is, he looks like he's pretty lights out. He has this killer split finger pitch that he has a ridiculously high induced swinging strike percentage on. Basically, no one can hit it. It's completely unhittable. It's like a really nasty cutter, and it just dives at the knees. I don't know if you've seen much of that, Pete, but it's unreal.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what he's riding his success on. So this guy is fun to watch, and there's a lot of debate right now over whether or not he's the real deal. He was coming out of spring training, had a really lackluster spring, and some people stayed on the hype train, and other people said, this is why I was never a believer. I was kind of in the latter camp, I will admit. But now he's coming out of the gate roaring here, and people who believed in him are looking like they're vindicated, and Pete is buying the hype. Tell us more about why you're buying the hype, Pete.
So for me, and then I'm going to spin this around and ask you if you're still buying it, or if you are now a believer when you weren't before. So for me, a lot of it is just watching it. I've been very fortunate that I've actually watched all of his starts so far this year, at least caught three or four innings of it. And exactly like you were talking about with how those pitches are diving at the knees, and just the overall presence that he is maintaining right now is what's a lot of fun for me to watch. That I don't know if it's all the years of playing in the Japanese league, but overall he just has this very stoic attitude. But at the same time, he gets really, really into the game. So the passion that is there, but the controlled passion, I think, is a great fit for baseball. And I know we talked last week about unwritten rules, and that tends to undo a lot of guys. But he seems, for being such a young guy, to just have this unbelievable scope right now in terms of how he's holding it down. And granted, incredibly small sample size. We still haven't really seen him get rattled, except for that very first game against the A's.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Was it against the A's that first game? I know the no-hitter through the seventh was.
Yeah,
who am I thinking of?
I don't know. Let me look that real quick.
But either way, that first game where he gave that three-run shot, I thought was really the only time we saw him truly even struggling, and he still seemed to power through that quickly. But, I mean, the Angels moved him up to hit seventh, which I know is low for a DH. But overall, this dude is pitching, and then – What is it? He'll take a day off and then he hits for two or three straight days and he takes a day off before the start. And
right.
He's hitting seventh and he's a pitcher. He's coming in as a pinch runner two or three times this year already. He's everywhere.
Yeah, and I mean, he's one of the top 10 fastest guys in the majors too. He's a sprinter. He played outfield in Japan. That's how fast this guy is.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's... a lot of it is just enthusiasm and right now how much he's giving to the game. But it's fun to watch out there, especially on the West Coast. That was great to watch. So have you changed your mind on this one? Are you starting to buy in? Is it too early? And as he kind of comes back to earth here over the next 10 starts, is this all going to go away?
Look, I don't think it's all going to go away. I think he is a ridiculously talented professional baseball player. And the Nippon Professional Baseball League in Japan, where he played his entire professional career, is not like, you know, it's not like the Australian Baseball League. Like it is a high level professional baseball league that is second only to Major League Baseball. And he thrived there. And so there's no question in my mind that he can thrive on the Major League scene. Really, the question is just how high his ceiling and how much higher than average is his ceiling going to be. And I think it's just way too early to tell. I said earlier that I was never a Shohei Ohtani believer in the sense that I don't think he's going to come in and revolutionize the sport or be a sort of Barry Bonds equivalent hitter and a Clayton Kershaw equivalent pitcher. And I still believe that's true in that that's not his actual ceiling. He's certainly given me pause to sort of reconsider my ideas about that, given his successful first couple weeks here. But ultimately, I just think it's way too early for us to determine that. Generally, what happens with these guys who start in the majors coming in from another high level of baseball. I mean, look at Eric Thames last season. Now, he had played in the majors before, but he went over to Korea, played in the Korean Baseball League, figured out how to hit a lot of sort of... junk pitches that aren't normally thrown here, like a spitball, forkball, split finger, and became a way better hitter through that. And so he fixed the holes in his swing that had been exploited before and comes back over here and went on a tear for April and May and then kind of cooled off because pitchers here figured out where the holes in his swing were. You know, I think everyone has those holes in the swing. It'll be some time before they figure out where Ohtani's are. But they're there. I guarantee you they're there. And then same thing with being a pitcher. I mean, as he's here more, he's going to be more predictable. We're going to have better data, higher fidelity data on the kinds of pitches he throws and where he throws them and the velocity and the movement with which he throws them. So hitters are going to be a little bit better at predicting and exploiting. And basically, as they get more information based on more exposure to him, they're going to get a little bit better in the chess game and they're going to know how to react. Now, of course, that works both ways. I think, you know, as he faces hitters, I'm sure he's a very smart guy. I'm sure he'll figure out how to better exploit the holes in those pitchers. But generally speaking, I think, you know, Shohei Ohtani versus the rest of the league, I think we'll see him come back to earth a little bit. He's not going to continue this torrid pace forever. But I do think he definitely will be an above average hitter and an above average pitcher. And I hope he is, because it's really exciting for the sport. Like you said, I love seeing him out there. I love seeing the, you know, the fans in the Los Angeles Angels Stadium who are really excited to show up for the games. You know, the sellout crowds who are there to see Ohtani play. I love seeing his passion when he's on the mound. I think it's really good for the sport, really enhancing my enjoyment of it, and just a really good thing for America. So, you know, in that sense, I'm on board the Ohtani hype train.
They're describing it as not even controlled chaos, just circus-like chaos.
I love it.
On the days where he's pitching, or even the days where his interpreter is helping him field questions when he's hitting. So yeah. Obviously that doesn't happen every single day, but the days he's pitching just seem ridiculous. And yeah, exactly what you said. I'm such a, I just root for the sport overall so much that this is just exciting right now to have a guy who's doing this kind of stuff. And I know he's going to come back to earth. He's going to go on some unbelievable cold streak in June. He's going to get lit up probably right after the All-Star game, because you know he's going to be an All-Star in DC this year.
Yeah.
And people are going to start calling it quits and saying everyone's learning how to hit him and it's over. But overall, I think it's going to be a fun year with him. I really do. He's going to have some down times like they do on 162 game seasons. I'm just hoping that somehow the Angels find a way to get he and Mike Trout into the playoffs this year. I really am.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I'm thinking back on our season preview discussion. I think the Angels are looking better and better in that division as time goes on.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree.
By the way, as we're talking here, the Angels are playing, and Ohtani is playing as a designated hitter, and he is 1-for-1 with a double already. So
yeah, first time hitting seventh in the lineup, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so it's good. Well, so we brought it up, and obviously you and I talked about unwritten rules in baseball last week quite a bit. But there's been some interesting moments in the game this year. So we've seen three bench clearing brawls I can cite. We saw two on Tuesday night alone.
Yep.
Between the Red Sox Yankees as well as the Rockies and the Padres, which kind of a weird matchup for a bench clearing brawl between the Rockies and the Padres.
I don't think I've ever seen Arenado charge a mound before. But he was heated.
So we saw that. We saw the Diamondbacks manager use some choice words to describe preferential treatment for Yadier Molina behind the plate last weekend.
That was ridiculous.
I think they were both in the wrong. I think Yadi got away with one by staying in that game after he pushed the umpire out of the way to get to the opposing manager, but they both got suspended.
No, I totally disagree, actually. I think the umpire did the right thing. Yeah, keeping Yadi in. Yeah, I think he did. Because Yadi, I didn't think was... I saw it as incidental contact between him and the umpire. He was really just trying to get after the manager who had called him, you know, a very offensive term.
Yeah. But he didn't just have that incidental contact once, though. I mean, it was three or four times of trying to throw this umpire out of the way. I mean, he's lucky that... who was it? The former Cardinal who got in his way. Daniel Descalso got in his way. And then Mike Matheny grabbed him. Mike's a huge guy. I think Yadi probably should have gotten the hook. But
it's sort of those rage blinders, right? Like you get so focused on one thing, you tune it out. I don't see him as intentionally trying to push the umpire out of the way. I think he was just angry.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
But I'm biased. I'm just a big Yadi fan. So
same, absolutely same. But so I got to ask, it's been a weird year so far in these first 3 weeks as we're seeing all these bench clearing brawls. Are you tracking on any of this Joe Madden, Clint Hurdle beef from this week between that series played in Chicago?
No, tell me about it.
So Wednesday night was a rout in Chicago, led by the Cubs. So they had it was the Cubs and the Buccos. Tied up in the sixth at 4-4, and then the Cubs just ran away with it and won 13-4. You're the seventh or the eighth inning. I'll look it up as I'm going here. Javier Baez, who is an incredibly exciting guy on the Cubs, but who is known for playing a little emotional, pops up, flips his bat out of anger, doesn't even hustle to first, knowing it's knowing it's going to be caught, and he's out, and he's clearly frustrated. And Clint Hurdle comes after him in a pregame press conference on Thursday to talk about, just like we mentioned, the unwritten rules, having respect for the game, and kind of all that coded language.
Yep.
Javier Baez mentioned in his postgame that he was pulled aside by multiple members of the Cubs organization and told he's always got to hustle to first, keep the emotions under control. But really, really interesting to see Clint Hurdle, who I would argue the Buccos are having a surprisingly good start to the year, really coming after this guy, two of the veteran managers in the game. Just really surprised to see that. And Joe Maddon is coming after him in his pregame and postgame comments. It really, really weird for a Buccos Cubs series to be that contentious. This isn't Cubs Cardinals. This isn't Yankees Red Sox. I mean, it's just weird. So the unwritten rules are really having an interesting effect on the game this year.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was surprised that Hurdle was criticizing Baez so directly for that. I thought it was just sort of strange and out of place. And I mean, let teams kind of, like, that's not a major issue at all. Let teams police themselves, and that's exactly what they did.
Well, so. And it's not like he hit a grand slam when the game was already over 13-4, flipped his bat, taunted the dugout, pounded his chest, whatever. No, he was mad because he flew out.
As an aside, I still think that would be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, as we talked about last week, I love the raw enthusiasm.
Yeah, yeah. It has a great place in the game.
So I'm interested to see what happens with that kind of stuff for the rest of the year. I wonder if things are going to settle or if we're about to see a contentious year.
Yeah, I hope it's the latter. I want to see passion in baseball. I don't want to see people get hurt. So I don't want to see people getting beaned. I don't want to see people charging the mounds and taking swings at each other. But I do want to see passion in the game from the players. And I want to see this sustained across a 162-game season because it's just so much more fun when everybody's invested.
How do you feel about these bench clearing brawls between players? You like them? You hate them?
It's always funny. Since a few nights ago when I saw a buddy of mine on Twitter say that anybody who describes these as brawls has never been to a large public high school, that really, I thought, hit home pretty well. Like, we use these words in baseball that make it sound like there's, you know, guys who are bringing knives in dark alleys and just, it's like Green Street Hooligans, you know, stabbing people after a football match in Ireland or something like that. And they're really never that violent. There are some punches thrown. I mean, I think the most violent moment I can remember in baseball was Runador and Jose Bautista getting into it at second base. Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah. Was that the one in the playoffs, right before the playoffs?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was right before.
Yeah.
That's like as violent as the game of baseball gets. So describing these things as bench clearing brawls sort of overstates how violent they actually are. And that's the first thing I'd say. I don't know. The bench clearing brawls, they're exciting, I guess. Like I said, I don't want to see people getting hurt. But when there's a disagreement and there's one guy starts moving towards the mound, then a bullpen empties, and then the other bullpen empties, and everyone trots out onto the field. I kind of like that. I don't know. What about you?
Yeah. I love a good bench clearing brawl. I'm a hockey fan.
Yeah.
So obviously these don't compare, but it is that raw excitement. But what I have to, your buddy hit the nail on the head. The funniest thing with these bench clearing brawls is these guys have already decided in their mind they're charging the mound, I would say 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
I mean, you watch that fight in Colorado, and I mean, that ball hadn't even fallen to the ground, and he was 3 steps out of the box already. But the funniest thing, especially in that fight, is you see the pitcher throw his glove at the guy.
It was actually pretty good form on the throw, too.
A leather baseball glove that has probably been with him for 8 years is really going to do some damage. And then all he does is backpedal the entire time. Yeah. I mean, he threw at him and then backpedals the entire time until all of his teammates can get in the way.
Right.
It's a whole lot of, we're all going to pound our chest and get mad and hold me back, bro. And then at the end of the day, that's exactly what happens. Everyone gets held back. Someone's helmet gets ripped off and you see that they have bleach blonde tips. And that's kind of hilarious. And then we all just stand around. And we eject two guys. One guy has his jersey ripped, and then we go back to doing exactly what we were doing. So yep. It's like the New Year's Eve of baseball. Like, all of this buildup, it's going to be epic, and then 12:01, let's go to bed. Like, it's a letdown.
Exactly.
But I love the lead up.
All right. Well, we should probably wrap up our Heart of the Order segment there. You have anything for garbage time before we close it out?
I did want to give just one interesting aside to bring up. We mentioned the Golden Knights and the Caps so far during off the bench, but how about the Golden Knights? You know, coming out 1-0 victory, hard fought game, obviously a 7-game series, but being in Vegas on Wednesday, I mean, they're putting chocolate statues of Marc-Andre Fleury, who, keep in mind, was a backup in Pittsburgh before they released him to the expansion draft, putting chocolate statues of him up. They're wrapping that huge Statue of Liberty that sits on the strip next to New York, New York, in a Golden Knights jersey. My shout out is yes to the Golden Knights, but even more so to the city of Las Vegas, who everyone has forever said a professional team will never thrive there. Granted, they haven't seen a professional team who struggles yet. But how about that city getting behind this team so much? I mean, I wanted to pick up tickets. They were over $200 when I checked on Tuesday night. It is just such a fun atmosphere in Las Vegas. I hope this team, like I said last week, they're not going to win the cup, but I think they're going to make it interesting out there in the West. So I'm cheering for the Golden Knights. I'm hoping it can be a Golden Knights Caps game or Caps Stanley Cup. But
yeah,
I think I'm going to be disappointed.
Yeah, probably. Well, we're cheering for you, Golden Knights. I think my favorite thing was after they clinched in the standings and had the little Y prefix by their name in the official standings because they had clinched, they changed their Twitter handle to reflect that as well.
Yeah, I agree. Did you see the clip of what they did before the game in true Vegas style? They had to have a ridiculous show on the ice where they had a dude dressed up. They had a dude dressed up as the Golden Knight, and then they've got a dude dressed up as the King's mascot, and it's just ridiculous.
It's like medieval times.
That's exactly what it felt like.
That's awesome.
Exactly. So good on that Golden Knights franchise. I hope this is a sign of good things to come, not only for the Knights, but also for the Raiders as they roll into Vegas here in the next couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Is that it for garbage time then?
That's all I got. You got anything?
No, I think we'll leave it there. Try to spare our listeners more of our voices. So since that's, you know, you got to give the people what they want, and that's what they say they want. So, all right.
You're welcome, America.
For all of you listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to Third String. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Zach Crippen. Pete is at Pete_Lequid. You can also check out some of our great written content at medium.com/thirdstring. And until next week, we will talk to you later.